Welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Betty.
I'm Shad.
And today we're going to be discussing a film that we found on Amazon Prime called Asylum from 1972.
Come to the asylum. Come to the asylum. To get killed. Come to the asylum.
Yes, I think the time has come to take violence toys away from you.
To get killed. Come to the asylum. To get killed. Asylum.
Now you hurry and get dressed, and I'll go down the hall and,
Asylum. Starring Peter Cushing, Britt Eklund, Herbert Lom, Patrick McGee, Barry Morse, Barbara Parkins, Robert Powell, Charlotte Rampling, Sylvia Sims, Richard Todd, James Villiers. Asylum. Asylum. The most exciting film you'll ever see.
So, interesting enough, this film, when you look at the description in Amazon Prime, states like it's the best anthology ever made. And I was like, I've never even heard about this anthology before in my life.
I have heard of it, but I had never actually seen it until we watched it the other night.
Yeah, what was going on? I mean, you got some recognizable names in the film. Well, once you look at the people, you're like, oh, the most obviously recognizable one would be...
Peter Cushing,
yeah. I was going to say Christopher Lee, because literally they're like one in the same...
They're in every movie together, almost. If they're not in a movie together, it must have been because one of them didn't make the train or something to get there.
The movie's also known as the House of the Crazies... per use, there's always going to be more or less a second name to a film.
Yeah, back in the old days, they used to just like, oh, okay, we ran this all over the country as The Asylum. Now, 6 months later, we're going to re-release it as House of the Crazies, maybe change the order of it, and we'll release it back to the drive-ins.
Yeah, they're still they're still doing that today. That happened with that, like, 47 Meters Down. It had one name. It was direct-to-video.
Yeah, and then they...
With one name, and then it got popular, and then they renamed it.
Yeah, they pulled it, and then renamed it, and came out... I can't remember what it was called before it was 47 Meters Down, though.
Oh, shit, don't go down there.
Yeah, that's probably what both of them should have been called. Also, in this one, if you've ever watched the Pink Panther movies, the guy at the end of it in the Mannequins of Horror section is the Chief Inspector Dreyfuss that's always very much annoyed by Clouseau. That's where I recognized him from.
Yeah, of course. I did not know who that person was because I had never seen any of those films.
Yeah, I've seen all those, so I recognize him immediately. He looks the same. He's one of those guys that when he was 30, he looked like he was 60. And when he was 60, he still looked 60. He never aged. He just looked the same. He looked like an old guy no matter when you saw him.
Yeah. Weird. The director of this one had directed several other horror movies. In his time frame. So he was kind of like known to do horror films.
Yeah, he's kind of a go-to guy for this, especially for Amicus, which they produced, the company that produced this produced a shitload of horror anthologies.
Yeah, I want to know, not that it was an anthology, but that movie Scars of Dracula. What does that entail? How does Dracula scar?
Maybe he's scarring other people.
Okay, with the bites on their inner thighs. Wink, wink. Yep. That's a joke, and you know what we're talking about. Or on their necks.
Yeah.
Per use, that's where it should be. The inner thigh thing was kind of awkward. It's like, are you biting me, or are we, some other thing is going to happen?
A little from column A, a little from column B.
And the film is actually written by someone very famous in the writing world.
Mr. Robert Bloch.
Yeah, who... has done. I'm going to leave it to you because it's one of your favorite films.
Psycho.
Yeah, Psycho.
You can't get much more better than that.
Yeah, we don't even have to name anything else because it's just like he did Psycho. The end.
Yeah. He also wrote the novels for like Psycho 2 in that as well.
Oh, that's cool.
The Psycho 2 novel is quite a bit different than the movie, but it's still good. This Roy Ward Baker that directed this, like you said, he'd done quite a few. Besides that, he did the famous Quatermass in the Pit one from the 60s that I think when they released it over here, it was called like 10,000 Years to Earth or something like that. But it's an interesting movie. There was two or three of them about Quatermass, which was like a scientist. There's a couple of movies about it in England. So it was a fairly popular series.
Well, this film, Asylum, the framing story has Dr. Martin arrives at the asylum because he's being interviewed for a job by someone in a wheelchair.
Yeah, who tells him, hey, the guy who was supposed to interview you for this job is actually a patient now because he went crazy and he injured me and he's now confined in the asylum. So for your job interview, I want you to go upstairs to this wing and interview several patients. I want you to tell me which one used to be the administrator here, because he has completely forgotten his entire life as a hospital administrator. He has no memory of it. He's gone into a completely, you know, psychotic episode, and you need to tell me which one of these people upstairs it is. And I'm not going to tell you if it's a man or a woman. Just go upstairs and talk to the patients and then come back down and tell me which one used to be the doctor here.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I wish that was my interview process. Sounds really interesting. I get to hear a whole bunch of weird, amazing stories from insane people.
See, my first thought was, okay, so working here drove the guy fucking crazy and he started stabbing people and he changed into a whole new life. You know, maybe I'll work at a less stressful asylum. Thanks for your time and consideration. I'm out of here.
Or you know that you can ask for just way more money because no one else is going to do the job. And you're just going to, like, you know, risk it. You're like, I'm going to need, like, you know, 100,000 million pounds.
I only need 100,000 pounds extra.
Yeah. I obviously have no idea of European currency.
Later on in the movie, the guy's excited for 200 pounds. So this was far enough back that he could have probably asked for an extra 1,000 pounds a year. And they'd have been like, good God, man. Only the queen makes that sort of money.
He's being, I want to say dragged around, but someone has to open the door to these psycho people, their rooms. So the attendant is Max, who's going around and opening the doors to each and every patient that he has to go.
I gotta say, see. They have some nice ass rooms in this asylum.
Yeah, each room was catered to the person's tastes.
Yeah, it's a very nice asylum. If I ever have to get locked up, I'd kind of like it to be in this one. It's like you're living in an old castle. You got a nice, like, hardwood floors, you know. It looked pretty comfortable to me.
Well, the thing is, if you remember, every person in the story came from wealth.
Not really. The tailor.
Okay, fine. One guy from the story did not come from wealth, but everyone else did. But the tailor, he had nothing in his room. So bam, his room was actually the one that you would think would look like a psycho ward room because it was so barren. Yeah. But the other ones were like kind of lavished, or they had things that they can do because they had the money to do so. So the first story is Frozen Fear.
Ooh.
And it's a recount from a woman named Bonnie. It was Bonnie, right? It was a lady that was recounting the story?
Yeah, it was a lady.
Oh, yeah. It was a lady. And she was this pretty little thing where the whole beginning of her story that she's telling before it actually gets into the story, she's actually not facing the camera. Her back is facing the camera to the audience. So you're just looking at her from behind and then hearing her over voice or whatever, indicating of, you know, recounting her story. And it's about a plot to murder the wife of the man that she's having, a wealthy man that she's having an affair with. She's the lover. And the wife is actually a very possessive woman who, you know, just studies voodoo on the side.
Well, you, like you do.
Yeah, I mean,
she's rich. She's got money. She doesn't need to do anything. So in the evenings, instead of, you know, whatever, she just goes down to the local witch doctor college and studies voodoo.
Yeah, she's, there's a, in the scene where she like creepily like comes up from behind from the husband. It's like, you are mine. You'll always be mine. You can never leave me. I will destroy you if you leave me and all this stuff. And it's like, maybe you shouldn't be telling him this stuff.
Maybe that's not the best idea.
Because I feel like that's going to drive someone to the edge because you're literally like suffocating him. Mind you, she weighed like 110 pounds. So I don't know how much damage she can physically do. But, you know, she had just come back from her like voodoo like rituals and like lessons. She came back with an ugly ass bracelet.
Yeah, she came back from, you know, Joe's voodoo lesson number 101.
Yeah, and the bracelet had, like, bones on it. And it was, like, that she made the bracelet to protect herself from his lover.
Yeah. And then I love how, you know, she explains all this to him. And it's like, I'm never going to leave you. You're never going to get to go away. You're mine, like you said. And then he says, hey, would you like to see something I've got for you in the basement?
Yeah, let's go to the basement. Let's la la. I have a sexy little surprise in the basement for you.
Oh, and that's the best part when they get down there and she's like, what? What is it, darling? What's the surprise? And he's like, look over in the corner. And she's like, a freezer. You know I've always wanted one of those.
Yeah, a big ass freezer. That's exactly what I've always wanted.
And then I love it where he's like, oh, and let me show you the best part. And then he just whips an axe out and is like, eek, eek,
eek. And he chops her to bits. And the cutaway scene is like a scene from the, like, they like go back to like the living room where you're hearing him like chop away, you know, for hours. And he's chopping away. And then when they go back to show him in the basement, he is actually the most efficient chopper and like packager I've ever seen in this a horror film.
This guy makes Dexter look like an amateur. He cut this woman up, wrapped her up in a very nice brown paper.
Parcels.
Yeah, he's got like, he's mailing her down there. He's going to take her to the post office and mail her. All he needs some stamps. She's wrapped up pretty as you can be.
He could have just sold her stuff to like the local meat market if he would have obviously maybe taken her clothes off. I don't really get into detail. I think she maybe still be wearing her clothes. I don't think he like put her, like gotten her naked and then chopped her up to bits. But it's so nicely wrapped and lovely. Yeah.
It's like he's a, like, I bet Christmas presents from that guy are amazing.
Yeah, and also there were no blood. Like, blood wasn't, like, spewing from the packages.
No. But, of course, this was the early 70s. They weren't going to show that, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it was very unrealistic, but it looked cool nevertheless. And, surprise, where did he put these packages?
In the freezer. And, of course, he makes the typical horror movie mistake. Was, oh, in all the chopping, her voodoo bracelet fell off. I'll just throw that in on top of the body parts. It'll be fine.
That did not work out for him. Spoiler alert.
Because I'm sure you figured out by now, listeners, that the voodoo bracelet brings the body parts back to life.
And it brings them back to life, still wrapped up in the parcels, as parcels. And they're like moving individually and attacking him.
My favorite is the head that just kind of hops around on its own. I don't know how it's hopping because it has no muscles. I guess maybe the neck muscles are like, eh! She's just hopping around on the neck muscles to make it go everywhere.
You know, it's that voodoo that you hoodoo that you do do. That's what it was.
Yeah, but it was intense. Going. Yeah. And we'll actually see the cover for one of the DVD releases of this is the wrapped up head on the front. But you're not sure if you look at the package, you're like, oh, is it a mummy? What's going on there? Oh, no, that's his wife.
Yeah, it's a good, I don't know, should we go into, like, further detail what happens, like, in the end?
Yeah, I think they all know by now that there's going to be spoilers here. We'll post the spoilers in the comments, too.
Spoilers. I feel like we should just say, we should rename the podcast to Spoiler Cast. There you go.
Yeah, I think you have to. In order to really talk about that, besides, this movie is, you know, 47 years old.
So if you haven't seen it by now,
chances are word's already gotten out, or, you know, it's not going to be that big of a shock to you.
Yeah. But definitely it's worth the watch, not to fast forward to giving our critique about it now.
So, of course, that's when Bonnie, the mistress, she shows up and it's like, oh, I parked out back like you told me to, so no one will see us. Hello.
Her name is Ruth.
Yeah.
Ruth is, oh, Bonnie's the mistress. I'm sorry. Ruth is the wife.
My bad. And she's like, hello, hello. Let me just go downstairs in the basement and see what I can find. Oh, all I find is the head and body parts wiggling around down there trying to kill me. And, of course, she passes out when she sees this, and she gets blamed for the murders.
Yeah, well, let's not just skip over the most amazing scene in the story, which is, I found the axe that he chopped her up with, and I'm being attacked, so one of the body parts is on my face. I'm going to chop at this body part that's roaming around my face. By the way, these body parts are, even though obviously the arm or the leg does not have fucking eyes, they know how to miss axes. Because every time she tries to hit this thing, it like moves to the left and moves to the right. It never gets hit. So they really don't show you. They kind of do and kind of don't. But she's trying to kill or get to this thing that's on her face. And then we go back to, then as Chad said, she's unconscious. Then we go back to the original, like the beginning of the part where you have the doctor in the room, Dr. Martin, and she turns around for the reveal.
She's got axe marks all over her face.
Yes, her pretty face, as she had her hair, her long hair framed over one side. She moves it to the side and shows, yeah, I axed myself. And
she got blamed for both murders because, of course, surprise, the husband was found killed with the axe down there too, because the wife's body parts used that to chop him up.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Now, the next story is called The Weird Tailor.
Yeah, and that's pretty apt. It should have been The Weird Client, because the tailor was pretty normal.
I would have just named it The Client.
Yeah.
Yeah, or The Devil Suit. Something that is not this title, because this title is
Necromana Suit?
Necromana Suit! That is the name, and that probably maybe gave away what the actual story is about. But that is a good name. So Bruno recounts how poor he is and how he had, it was going to be evicted every chance because he was just a poor little tailor where people weren't coming in to have tailor work done anymore. And all he was doing was literally pressing people's clothes. So he couldn't make his monthly rent. And here comes the owner of, you know, I'm guessing like the slumlord guy that comes over with his like book of, do you have my money for the month? Oh no, I'm going to either shut you down or chop you into pieces and throw you in the river kind of thing. And he obviously doesn't have the money. The guy's like, the landlord's like, I'm coming back on Saturday to reclaim the money. And then he's like, that's not enough time, but, you know, he doesn't have a choice. He has to figure it out.
So a little while later, Peter Cushing knocks on the door and says, hi, I would like to pay you £200 to make a special suit for me. But when you make this suit, it has to be out of this material. And he takes this material out that is glowing. It's like a luminous kind of material. It looks, you know, it kind of glows and reflects the light. And he's like, it has to be made out of this. And you can only work at it, on it during the hours that are listed in these instructions. Like starting at midnight, it has to be done by 5 a.m. You can only work on it on those hours. You have to cut it in this way. You can't make any mistakes. And for that, I will give you the £200. But I need it by Saturday.
I feel like it's the same material, and I may be wrong, that they used in Superman when they showed Jor-El.
Yeah, it looks like that kind of stuff. The glowy, like you kind of reflects light off of it.
Yeah, it's really weird looking, and he gives them a book. Like, literally all this tailor has to do is exactly what the book tells him to do, because it tells him what hours he needs to work. He cannot work past these hours or before these hours. It's like midnight to like 5 o'clock in the morning, and he has to do exactly what the book entails. So, of course, we all know, the tailor is going to do something fucked up, which is going to fuck up some process. We thought it was going to go, something was going to go awry because some blood of his got on the suit. He worked past it one day for like maybe 30 minutes. He worked past the time frame allotted.
It was only just a few seconds. It was like 30 seconds past
time. It was like
30
seconds? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was 30 minutes.
No, but when his blood got on the suit, it just immediately was absorbed into the material.
Yeah.
It didn't leave a stain. It just slowly vanished.
And I feel like when you see Peter Cushing enter the scene, you know automatically this motherfucker evil. Or he has, he's touched. There's something just a little off about him.
He's either Dracula or he's here to kill Dracula. One or the other. If Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee show up, one of them's Dracula and one of them's there to kill Dracula. You take your pick, but that's how it went.
Well, the tailor is able to finish the suit. And, you know, he has this little assistant. I think it may be like a relative of his.
It was his wife.
It was his wife? It was his wife?
Yeah.
Was it or was it his like granddaughter? Because she was super fuck young. But it is like a foreign country. So that was acceptable, I guess.
Yeah. And it was the 70s. You could marry a 12-year-old back then.
Anyways. So they go, he goes, the instructions is he has to like deliver this. So he goes, delivers to like Peter Cushing's like a loft.
He's like, home. Oh, don't mind me. The electricity seems to be out right now. Come on, let me see. Now, you made this suit. I gave you the measurements and everything. Said, I forgot to mention, he said the suit wasn't for him. It was for his son. And as they're going creepily around the house in the dark, just only with candlelight, that's when Peter Cushing decides to drop the bomb of, oh, yeah, I don't actually have the money to pay you.
But I will once I put the suit on my son, which I'm like, okay, what is the son, like, what does he do that this magical suit is going to automatically give him, like, cha-ching in the bank? But Peter Cushing was under the impression that riches were going to come to him. Now, he does disclose. It's like before you even have the suit in your hand, because the tailor's like literally holding the suit on for like dear life, because he refuses to give the suit up to Peter Cushing at all, because he wants to get paid. Like, his life is on the line, his business, his livelihood is on the line. He needs to have his money that he was told he was going to get once he delivered this. And Peter Cushing goes on to proceed to go on and say, like, I'm poor.
I spent every penny I had to get this book that told me how to make the suit. And the book looks mysteriously like the Necronomicon.
Yeah, we think it was a Necronomicon.
So he showed him, like, in the, that's when the tailor's like, oh my God, this, you know, I can't believe this. I'm not giving you the suit. He's like, no, I'll get you the money. Come on. Well, that's when you discover that Peter Cushing's son is dead.
Yeah, because the tailor, like, looked to the side and saw, like, this door. He's like, where does this door lead to? And he opens the door, and there's his son, like, in the coffin. Like, it was a viewing.
He's like, what the hell is going on here? He's like, come on, we just got to put the suit on him. The suit will bring him back to life, and then I'll have money, and blah, blah, blah. Well, they get into an argument over the suit. Peter Cushing whips out a gun. And, or was it the tailor who brought the gun? No, it was Peter Cushing had the gun. He takes out the gun and says, no, I'm taking the suit. They argue, they fight, and Peter Cushing gets shot.
Yep, he sure does, and he did.
So the tailor grabs the book, takes the Necronomicon, which never take the Necronomicon.
And the suit, and he runs out the fucking store and goes back to his wife. And basically, after, you know, the pressure of, like, what's going on? Why do you still have the suit? Where's the money? He's like, yeah, I killed this dude. And the wife flips the fuck out. She's like, we have to call the police. It's the right thing to do. Blah, blah, blah. She goes to call the police. Then all of a sudden, he's, like, choking his wife out. Now, in all of this that occurred, she actually, like, took the suit away from him because he's like, get rid of the suit. By her getting rid of the suit, she actually had put it on the mannequin that was in the front of the store. It was a man mannequin that she always talked to when she dressed him. Because that was a mannequin where they would tailor the suits on.
Yeah.
And she always, like, talked to this mannequin. You see during the kerfuffle of her getting choked out by her very elderly 80-year-old husband. She's, like, 12. She's, like, in her 20s. She is getting choked out, and then the suit,
guess what happens,
brings the mannequin to life.
Yep. So it comes over and attacks him. Now, they were never really clear, like, what happened. Did the mannequin and the wife run away after that? I mean,
they really don't actually end that story. This is not the framing of the story of the whole movie. The framing has a bunch of holes in it, and so does this story in particular, where you just don't know. All you know is that the tailor, it says to Dr. Martin that he's still out there. So we never know, did the wife die? Was she saved by the mannequin? Like Shad said, did they run off and have, like, is it like mannequin with fucking Kim Cattrall? Now he's fucking, like, come to life, living in the suit, and there's a luminescent suit man walking around with a 12-year-old wife. There's just so many unanswered questions.
Yeah, and how did he get admitted? Did he kill the wife and they find that? And then the suit's running around, the mannequin's running around? Or did they just call and figure out that he had killed the guy?
Or the wife testified that he killed the guy? I mean, there's so many different...
And then he's like, no, the suit I put on the mannequin came to life. It must have done it. And they're like, yeah, sure it did.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was the suit, wink, wink. And so she, you know, was having an emotional love affair with the mannequin by dressing him and, you know, caressing his cheeks. Mind you, this mannequin looked insane. Like, it was a mannequin. I do not want to make love to this mannequin. He looked very, he was very 70s style, but very creepy looking. Yeah. More creepy than a usual mannequin. So that story ends, and Max, the attendant, asks him, you know, do you think that that was the... Dr. Starr, the former administrator, and he's like, not yet, you know, let's finish watching. That story was adapted for a Boris Karloff television series called Thriller with the same name. So that's interesting. I would have liked actually to see that Boris Karloff version of this story.
I think that's on Amazon Prime. We'll have to look it up.
Okay. The next story is called Lucy Comes to Stay.
Oh, yes.
Right off the bat, maybe like 10 minutes in, you already know.
I wouldn't say 10 minutes. I'd say like 10 seconds in, you know she's crazy.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. I was giving the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, so she's insane, and that is Barbara, who's being played by Charlotte Rampling, who is Dr. Vogel in Dexter. If you guys are Dexter fans out there, she is very young and looks nothing like how she did in Dexter, obviously. So she's not recognizable at all, but she's Barbara, and she is coming back home from being locked away. You know, she had a little time in the asylum beforehand, so she like really likes asylums, I guess. She like, yeah, really loves to live there. And the whole thing was like her brother put her in there because she was a little off her rocker, but also another motive, she's actually the like executor of the estate. Her parents left her the money and like the home in her name, so he's trying to like bamboozle her out of that and take it away from her, so obviously he can have the riches and the home to himself. So he like admitted her for good reason, but as you can probably tell, she has a friend named Lucy, who Lucy and her get into a little crazy,
some trouble.
Yeah, a little bit of trouble here and there.
They're and a little Thelma and Louise.
She's not allowed to speak about Lucy in front of her brother because that's the whole reason why he sent her away. So he's like, you look better, but, you know, don't ever mention that name in this house.
So right away, you know something bad happened there.
Yeah, and then when she gets there, there's a woman that comes down the stairs, and it's like her nurse attendant. And you know, Barbara's like, what? I'm feeling good. Like, you just said I look good. I seem good. And now you're telling me, like, I have someone that's going to literally watch over me. And let me just know that it's, like, 3 o'clock in the fucking afternoon. And the nurse is like, you need to take a nap. She's like, it's in the afternoon. Why do I have to take a nap?
It's like, I'm a grown woman. She's like, no, you need to be taking a nap.
You had a long journey and you need to take a nap. So she's, you know, given pills to help with the nap. And and she's, you know, brought upstairs so she can have her nap. But of course, she's not going to take a nap because she kind of like...
Well, first of all, it is 3 p.m. She's a grown woman.
Yeah, she kind of like does the whole like, I'm going to pretend to take the pills but hold them under my tongue deal. And gets rid of the pills and doesn't take a nap. But at the same time, there's a mysterious call for the nurse. And her mom has just been in a terrible accident. And she needs to leave on the next train ASAP. So the brother needs to obviously take her because he's a gentleman. And of course, you know, it's like Britain. So there's like in the middle of nowhere. So he needs to take her there. And 9 hours later, he returns. No. he goes and takes her. And leaves Barbara alone at home where she decides, you know what? I like taking pills, but not the pills, the sleeping pills they took me. I'm going to take these other pills I was hiding in my drawer after looking into every single drawer of my vanity. And I hid some pills in the roller, in my hair rollers.
Good place to hide them, by the way.
Yeah, so she takes those pills and that's when things get a little wild.
That's when Lucy comes to visit.
And Lucy's like, hey... What you doing? Are you taking them pills again?
Let's get the hell out of here. Let's just take all the money in the house and go.
Yeah, we don't need to be with your brother. Your brother can't tell you what to do. Let's live our own lives. Let's have an adventure. And of course, Barbara's like, how did you get here? Where did you go? What's going on? And, you know, Lucy's like, enough of that. We'll talk about that later. Let's get the jack out of here.
Because I'm the one that made the phone call. Spoiler alert. I called. And I had the housekeeper sent away. Oh, and I cut the phone lines. It's like, but my brother, he'll be back any time. Oh, don't worry about that. I put those knockout pills that he gave you. I put those in his tea.
Yeah, when he returns, she drugs him and cuts. And this was not my favorite story. I don't think I have a favorite, but it was the most clever one.
Yeah.
Because they show you Lucy. They show Lucy... doing these things, and then later on when they show you the full story, they show you scenes that you didn't see of what she did in between the scenes. It's kind of hard to explain, but it was, I thought it was very clever the way that they shot this.
Yeah. And so after a little while, the nurse returns and is like, hey, they had never heard. My mom was fine. There was nothing there. So I'm coming back. So she comes back. When she gets there, you know, she sees that, you know, she's about to, the girl's about to leave. She's like, well, you can't be going anywhere this time of night. She's like, no, it's fine. That's when you see that the brother has a pair of scissors sticking out of his chest.
Yeah, and that's when they show you that the phone line was cut, but then also he got stabbed.
Yeah, she put him to sleep all right, but with scissors, not with the knockout drops.
Yeah, and Barbara is, like, running up the stairs, you know, away from the nurse because she's like, oh, my God, like, you know, where's Lucy? Where's Lucy? Where'd she go? It was Lucy. You know, she's blaming it all on this, and the nurse is like, the phone thing is cut off, and, you know, she runs up the stairs after Barbara, and then she gets the scissors in the chest.
Yeah.
The nurse.
And, you know, that's when you discover that, oh, she was in the hospital because she had an imaginary friend named Lucy that did bad things.
Yeah, and it was her. She has, like, a double personality. Yeah. She has personality disorder. So she's Lucy. And when it goes back to the Dr. Martin, he, you know, asks her, you know, you're saying it's Lucy. Where's Lucy? And she looks into the mirror and the audience sees her, Barbara. And then when he asked her, where is she? She's like, well, she's right there. Can't you see her? It's Lucy that you see in the mirror.
Yeah, it was a good effect.
Yeah, it was a really good effect. So in her eyes, that's what she's seeing. And that's what she wholeheartedly believes, because that's what she's looking through the, like, looking out of the mirror. But then the audience knows that it's actually Barbara the whole time. It's not someone else. So that was actually a pretty decent story. These actually, if any of you have ever watched The Night Gallery, which is like my favorite horror TV show of all time, I'd have to say I've seen at least 75% of the episodes. It's a really good show, but the way that this was shot and just the look of it and the feel of the stories reminded me so much of The Night Gallery as I was watching it.
Yeah, because they're all kind of like in one location throughout the whole story. They don't travel a whole lot, you know. This, like, I'm pretty sure where a lot of this was filmed was just the other side of the hospital, you know.
Yeah.
Like another part of this big mansion that's supposed to be the hospital. They just filmed all these stories on the other side of that, I'm sure.
The last story is Mannequins of Horror. And it's M-A-N-N-I-K-I-N-S. Not mannequins, like traditional mannequins. And this is about Dr. Byron.
And he's the one that said it's Herbert Lohm, who played the Chief Inspector Dreyfus in the Pink Panther movies. And he also played the doctor in The Dead Zone for Christopher Walken.
Okay.
He was his doctor in The Dead Zone. He's the one who tells Christopher Walken that, yeah, you know, my mother died in World War II getting me out of the country. And when Christopher Walken touches him, he's like, no, your mom didn't die. She's still living. Here's your phone number.
Wow. So, well, Dr. Byron automatically, Dr. Martin is like, well, this is the most obvious choice because this motherfucker a doctor. Dr. Byron, you know, he's a, you know, like great or supposed to be a great neurosurgeon. But he's a little touched because you see that he's working on something when Dr. Martin walks in with Max, the attendant, and he's working on his little project. For a second, I thought, oh, he's building, like, you know, little cars or, you know, one of those, like, ships in a bottle kind of fucking deal. But no, he's working on transferring souls into small automations. Like,
what it looks like is, like, one of those 1950s sci-fi robot bodies, the toys they had that you would wind up and would walk and the arms would kind of move up and down. It's that kind of body, but with a human head on top of it.
And the human head looks like William Shatner.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I make these little mannequins. I'm going to transfer my soul into one. I've already taken some of my viscera and put it inside the mannequin. So it has organs like I do.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, he crazy. I mean, obviously he's in the insane asylum, but...
What was interesting on this one was they show him doing that, but they never really showed with him how he got to the asylum.
They don't show the backstory at all.
Yeah, they just show him there in the asylum. He's making this, and that's when the guy's like, oh, I've probably seen enough.
Probably because that's all you need to see. And his story actually works into the framing of the story, and the reason why certain things end the way they do is mostly because of him. So they didn't want to spend all this time on probably doing a backstory for him when he's the one that's actually going to be influencing, like, the end of the whole movie.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. But, yeah, so we have automated Michael Myers running over, like, this very puppet master. I was like, this had to have someone watch this and was, like, inspired by this, because it's straight up puppet master.
Yeah, it's this, that creepy puppet look like they have in that.
And, you know, he does, like, a weird... They leave the room, and now Dr. Martin has to go back to Rutherford, the guy in the wheelchair, and tell him who he thinks is the real doctor. All the while, at the same time this is happening, they left Dr. Byron behind in his room, and he's doing his weird, like, thing. And he's, like, making, like, laying down and, like, making weird eye contact with one of the Michael Myers dolls. And it's, like, a back and forth thing. It's like, ooh. sense, you know, one would surmise, I mean, one would guess that he's transferring his soul into this thing.
Yeah.
And he does. And the thing leaves the room because, you know, it goes through like the dumb waiter, right? That's the name of those things. I always think about H2O and that scenario.
Yeah, all those old houses had the dumb waiter like that.
So. I love dumb waiters. I wish we had one. That would be pretty dope. And also scary because it creeped me out, but nevertheless. And that's how he's getting floor to floor because his legs are like 2 inches long.
Yeah.
And he enters the office of very quickly because, mind you, Dr. Martin is like on his way to Rutherford's office. The guy actually gets there, the little Michael Myers automated thing, and he gets into the office. Dr. Martin's already in the office. He finally arrives. He's sitting down, whatever. They're talking. He's like, okay, tell me who it is. And Dr. Martin's like, I'm done with this. This is a stupid, this is shenanigans. I'm a doctor. You know, I thought he was going to go into like the whole like Star Trek thing. Like, you know, I'm a doctor, damn it. Not a, you know, a guesser.
And I'm a doctor, not an investigator.
There you go. Thank you. That was the first word that came into my head. I was like, guesser. That's an actual thing. And all the while that's happening, the Byron's doll has jumped up on top of the desk and picked up a scalpel and stabbed Rutherford behind his head.
Yeah, it gets him right at the base of the brainstem where it just kills him instantly.
Yeah, and he dies and falls over. And Dr. Martin's like, what the fuck is happening? You know, and, you know, it's supposed to, like, he does pick up the phone, but it's dead because it got cut. And he runs out the office trying to find help. And he, you know, obviously runs into Max, the attendant, who they go, like, gets, you know, he, like, forces his way into one of the rooms. And because, you know, your thing is,
oh,
like,
you're leaving out the part where he decided to take the little William Shatner thing and just stomp it to pieces.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. He did find the Shatner thing and then stomp it to pieces. And then all of the viscera kind of oozed out of the doll.
Yeah, you saw the little guts coming out of the robot there, the robot body.
And there's like commotion and he goes and finally finds Max. And Max comes out the room and he's like, Dr. Byron was literally like combusted.
He like crushed. He's crushed.
He's crushed. In which they don't show. That would have been disgusting. But you see it through the William Shatner doll. And they go into another room. And he sees like a gurney in the corner that has like a blanket over him. Dr. Martin. And he's like, what's that? And Max is like, don't touch him. And that's when he sees that it's a dead body. And reveal Max the attendant is actually the doctor. That's where the plot hole is. Because how could Rutherford not have known that Max the attendant was a doctor all along?
Well, I was trying to think, did he say go upstairs and figure out which one is them? Because he said, remember, the only way to open this door is in this office.
I thought Max and Rutherford saw each other when they given the exchange, like, he's going to take you around. We'd have to look back and see. I thought that's what happened because it would make more sense if he said, go to, you know, the first floor and the attendant is going to walk you around and you never see an interaction between the two because Max has been dead.
I think they did interact. I think he may have known that Max was the guy, but he didn't actually say, like, did he actually say, like, it's one of the patients, or did he say just go upstairs and figure out who is the thing? Like, because Max couldn't get out of the room without Rutherford opening the door.
Yeah, but...
So he was still trapped up there.
Yeah, but at the same time, Max was a psycho because he's the one who put you in the wheelchair. So why would you go along with this whole charade of trying to figure out when you literally are feeding the lion, the lamb to the lion?
Yeah, I don't know. That was one thing I could think.
I don't know. It was, for me, it was a plot hole. That's what it was like, what kind of moment. And of course, Dr. Martin doesn't make it out. He gets murdered. And like in all things, you know, the next shot is... car coming up the road towards the asylum, and it's the new doctor that's coming in.
It's like, oh, come on in. We need to talk to you.
Yeah, trying to go for the job. So Max's deal is like he's just going to get all these doctors to come in and he's just going to murder, play with them, you know, because he's insane, and then murder them.
Yeah.
He's not eating them. He's just going to murder them, which is like, I don't know, that's going to get tired.
Like, so eventually people are going to be like, you know, a lot of people go for job interviews at this hospital and never come back.
Yeah, no one's ever looking for them because it's like in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Isn't there someone else that works at the hospital that would know about this too?
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know, plot holes.
Yeah, there had to be other nurses there somewhere. I mean, you couldn't just be the doctor and the one guy, right? Because that was a huge hospital.
Yeah, well, there was a head nurse, and there was the asylum gatekeeper, and a new houseman. So there were other people, but they didn't know what was going on. Is it going to start smelling in there? There's so many questions.
Yeah.
But overall, it's a pretty decent anthology for its time. You know, if you like that kind of thing, like we mentioned before, this company that made the film actually had made other anthologies. One of them being the Tales from the Crypt, the original, which is one of my favorite anthologies.
Yeah, they also did the follow-up to that, the Vault of Horror is the name of it, I believe.
Or just the Vault.
I think it's Vault of Horror.
We're going to go with Vault of Horrors because that sounds dope.
But I think we've got a double DVD of that that has both of them.
We do. I've seen both films. Have you seen both of those movies?
I believe I have, yeah.
Yeah, Vault of Horror, yeah. That's the name of it. So definitely check it out. It's on Amazon Prime, Asylum from 1972. Not the film from 2005 or the TV show with the same name, supposedly. I guess they've used this name several times.
Yeah, it's a good horror name.
In, you know, the industry. But it was pretty good. Some recognizable names if you know, you know, these kind of people. Oh, Lucy was Britt Eklund, which you're probably like, who the fuck is that? But she's like in her time, she was like a Swedish sex symbol, and she played Willow in The Wicker Man. So she's, you know, another horror recognizable person somewhat. She did other things, other horror movies too. But that was, I would say, her claim to fame as that Wicker Man, and then yeah, her modeling and all that other stuff that she did. But thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope that you check out the film and let us know. Do you like the film? Do you agree that it is the best anthology ever made? I don't know who wrote the description, but I'm like, I don't know about that, but it was decent. It was
the best anthology made in 1972.
That's true. Let's say that. Let's say that.
Best horror anthology made in 1972. Boom.
Boom. Done. That I will stand behind that statement. And stay tuned to the horror, guys.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.